you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Crispy, crunchy, and nutritious. It is the Sixers Talk Podcast brought to you by Wilmington University. WilmU Works, Danny Pommels, Noah Levick, Ben Berry in the cut like a Band-Aid. We are coming to you live from Rivers Casino. Thank you for checking us out on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or wherever you are catching us. Man, Noah, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Suddenly, coming off of this All-Star break, we got some fantastic basketball to enjoy. High-level competition. But at the same time, the Sixers coming out on the short end of this thing two out of three times and had to come back against Memphis. Jason Tatum didn't have a great game, but the Sixers still got deep six by him when it mattered most. The late Joel Embiid shot didn't go last night against Miami, a potential first round opponent if they keep rising up the standings, once again getting the best of the 76ers. It's crazy to think, though, that was the first game they have played Miami since they eliminated them from the playoffs last May. What do you make of this whole schedule thing? Of course, the Sixers on the court here in short order in Miami, back to back. So I guess they're worse places to go after a loss, but a loss it was last night.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first things that stood out to me when we were trying to dissect the initial schedule, just how long they'd have to wait to play the Heat. And honestly, for me, there was, despite the considerable amount of time since the Game 6 loss, real deja vu vibes there in that first half. Just inexcusable for me how poorly the Sixers rebounded. Miami is not an elite offensive rebounding team. They're middle of the pack statistically, and yet they grabbed the first nine offensive boards in that game. Jimmy Butler with a couple of emphatic ones, and the Sixers also conceded the first 14 points off turnovers. So just giving Miami...
not a formula for success.
No, just this huge possession advantage. And
a team, Miami, that doesn't shoot the three ball well comes out getting busy from behind the arc.
Yeah, and honestly, I was expecting that. I think they were due for a hot game. Over their last eight, they'd been under 30%. And sure, they're not a great three-point shooting team, but they were bound to hit some of the open and wide open ones that hadn't been going down. So, okay, the Sixers can chalk some of that up to they caught Miami at a time where they were especially motivated and likely to be hot from behind the arc. But, man, just second best in terms of a lot of the basics with hustle and effort and intensity. And many of those, I think we categorize them as intangibles, but nope, there was a very large negative tangible impact. And not the way the Sixers wanted to start that game, and kind of baffling to me that they did so. But yeah, yet again, you couldn't ask for a much more dramatic finish. And James Harden, man, he had a good look at the buzzer, and it was perfectly online, but just a fraction of an inch long. And he said afterwards, look, if one or two things had broken our way, we'd be having a very difficult conversation now. I think that is valid, but I think also the Sixers obviously have some flaws that we knew about and that are going to tend to look worse against high-level opponents. And the Heat haven't been an elite team, but they sure looked like they were very determined to beat the Sixers yet again in Philadelphia. And Jimmy Butler kind of willed them to this win. I mean, that shot at the end was wild.
I was just saying the same thing to Ben, because I just don't want to face Miami in the first round. Right now, they're set up to face Brooklyn, which I think is a perfect opponent. But Miami's charging up the standings. I don't want to face them in the first round because Jimmy Butler is the type of player that holds a grudge. And he's a type of player who, when it comes down to crunch time, can will his team to win. And you just hit the nail on the head for me, because I just don't want to face them. And here they are, the Sixers facing them again tonight, 12 of the next 15 on the road, 22 games left to go. We're getting down to the nitty gritty.
We are. And the Sixers tried to spin this positively as the tight losses and the playoff like intensity is good for them, and you grow through those experiences. And I think that is in large part valid, but just the first half of that game, I can't say much positive about that. I thought they were very lucky to only be down 8 points. And
you could say the same thing about the Memphis game, right?
Yeah, to an extent. Yeah. So just looking for greater consistency, and sure, some of that you can chalk up to they've had key players miss a lot of games through injury, and they're still trying to figure X, Y, and Z out. But some of it, you just got to be better. Like, you got to show up. And to me, that Miami series last year was defined by too many games and too many stretches where they didn't really show up in terms of the effort and the intensity in a perplexing way. And honestly, it felt very similar, albeit much lower stakes, last night in the first half of the game. But nevertheless, yeah, there are real silver linings here where you see the Sixers' talent level is more than sufficient to be competitive with high-level teams, but still obviously an open question of whether it's good enough to beat high-level teams, to win second-round series, etc. And those questions remain on the table for the time being.
You're right about that, because this could definitely be a team that, with the right draw, does not make it out of the first round, let alone make it past the second into the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals. And let's talk about that last shot, man. I didn't feel like Joel should have gave it up. I thought it was a good pass. I thought it was a great shot. It was a good decision. I just would have preferred it had been a few possessions. If we're going to go down the road of those last 3-4 minutes where Joel didn't touch the ball, he finally touched it after Harden has shot it a couple times in a row, and he got double teamed and kind of shot a bad jumper there on the baseline. And then there were two tough missed layups by Maxey and Melton, I believe, that you just got to have in that situation. And then Joel does finally get it, because I thought that he was leaning so hard on the left side, banging in the Bam Adebayo. He did it twice. I thought on the third time he could have drop stepped and went to the basket strong and maybe laid up, dunked it, or went to the line. But I was talking to one of our producers in NBC Sports Philadelphia, Jeff Wexler. He was just making a point that I think I have noticed as well. Just Joel just oftentimes tends to lay it up inside rather than go up and try to dunk the basketball. And I think that was why Cody Zeller was able to block his shot when he went to the glass to try to, instead of just going straight up with two hands and trying to dunk it, or which would have made it more difficult for him to block it. He pent Joel's shot to the board because he went off glass, but I thought it looked good out of James' hands. Hey, you're going for the win at home. I don't fault them for that. I just thought that Joel had a chance to win it with the ball in his hands. He was double teamed, not triple teamed, but I thought he had that spin move to the baseline where he could have shot the basketball. But how do you think it played out in your eyes sitting there courtside?
Yeah, just without any downhill momentum and with the degree of physicality they tend to allow late in games, even Joel Embiid, I find it hard to believe he would have created enough separation to just get into the paint. And maybe it was in his head that, you know, not too far, you know, before Bam had blocked a shot when he tried, the turnaround along the baseline. So look, Joel Embiid this year has really preached making the right play and trusting that his teammates will reward him for doing so.
Well, that was it last night.
And yeah, that was the right play. And he even said after the game, you know, he's going to make the next one, the next opportunity he gets there. So I personally didn't have a problem with that specific decision. The off-ball spacing on that play was not ideal. There are a few guys gummed up around the similar area.
And you also didn't have Tobias Harris available to stretch the floor at his full percentage.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, Harris was certainly something to monitor there. You know, injured his calf in the fourth quarter of that game and was pretty peripheral, you know, overall impact-wise. So we shall see. But yeah, I think I'm not really inclined to nitpick anything that happened there late game in terms of the play call or in terms of what Joel Embiid did. And James Harden was very close to a game winner, and we would have all been thrilled with that.
Yes. But
just didn't happen, and the Sixers put themselves in a position where they needed to be very good. They needed to be nearly perfect because they were so far from that in the first half of this game. Is honestly my major takeaway. I think overall, yeah, the execution down the stretch was scratchy from both teams, and there was a lot of frenetic energy and lack of composure and lack of rhythm by both sides. But late in the game,
but
James Harden...
But it's time for the Sixers to stop showing. I mean, the Heat are a team that are fighting to get out of the playing series, who are trying to make their way up the standings, where the Sixers are supposed to be the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference. I mean, Milwaukee's on a 14-game win streak, man. You're trying to keep up with the Celtics, Milwaukee, and playing down to competition that you should beat, falling behind, having to catch up, you know, injuries suddenly affecting the outcome, turnovers, bad rebounding. Yeah, they're right there. We're not trying to overreact. But at the same time, we have definitely had some serious eyeballs and thoughts on this stretch of games, and here we are 3 games in, 1-2 in that stretch, and just almost could have be 3-0 or be right where you will want to be, and those flaws wouldn't be as exacerbated. You know what I mean? It just all of a sudden you're pointing to the negative things instead of the positive things. Maxey going 14 of his 23 in the third quarter. You know what I'm saying? It's like you're not even talking about that. You're talking about everything that could have happened.
Well, I think if they'd won this game, it would have been a bit fortunate. And I came away feeling like...
Because of the way they played in the first
game. I came away honestly feeling like the Heat deserved to win just because the Sixers were inexcusably bad in the first half and just inferior in so many areas. And yeah, Maxey, I think, spearheaded that third quarter surge and allowed them to keep their head above water while Embiid was out in foul trouble. But I think a win would have felt a little lucky for the Sixers. I think in the Celtics game, they were the better team for the majority of that game and then paid for lapses in focus and just poor transition defense that let Al Horford crush them with these three-pointers that, you know, allowed Boston to get back in that game. But yeah, last night, hard to overstate for me how bad the first half was from the Sixers, how disappointing it was, I guess, given the context, especially. I think down the stretch of games, there are reasons to be encouraged. Just number one, the half-court offense here tends to look very good because you've got two great half-court offense players, and there's a little bit more of that in playoff basketball. And you look at overall the clutch numbers, they're 20-13, even after these two losses. And they have the best defensive rating in the clutch in the NBA, which to me is consistent with how it's felt. Obviously, you're not talking about a huge sample size, but I do think the Sixers dial it up a notch or two typically when games are tight and they know that, you know, stops are required to win. So I don't think their clutch performance necessarily needs to be the thing we pinpoint as super discouraging. But for me, it's the first half no-show that is the worst thing that happened within this three-game stretch.
They're digging too big of a hole for themselves.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely last night, the performance was just unacceptable in the first half. And yeah, they only went down 11. Again, to me, I think it would have felt entirely appropriate if that was 17 or 18. But definitely a situation where they needed to be excellent after being poor for the majority of the game.
More Tyrese Maxey discussion, as well as we'll delve into what's going on with PJ Tucker and some comments from Doc Rivers. But let's pay some bills here and discuss our partnership with Wilmington University. Are you ready to build career skills in 2023? Apply to Wilmington University today and get started by March 6th. Learn more and apply at wilmu.edu. Upskill, reskill, or start fresh in 2023 with a degree or certificate from Wilmington University. WilmU works for you. Apply today to start March 6th. Of course, we're coming to you live here from Rivers Casino right on Delaware Avenue. It's time to rush to new rewards at Rivers Casino. Now there's a whole new way for you to earn, redeem, and level up your rewards. Get your new Rush Rewards card and get more out of your game at Rivers Casino Philadelphia. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. The Sixers embarking on some road warrior ways here as they're heading to Miami and a bunch of games before they head back to the Wells Fargo Center. Some tough ones at that. And just breaking a little while ago, Will Barton has signed with the Toronto Raptors. If there was any thoughts of you hoping he would land here in Philly some way, somehow, that is not going to happen. But what is happening is Tyrese Maxey erupted for 14 in the third quarter. Is just a fun player to watch. On the broadcast, Kate Scott mentioned that few players can get the fans revved up like a stretch of Maxey playing well. And that was evident last night. Off the bench, starting lineup, is it affecting him? There's so many opinions out there about that. Noah, where do you fall on whether or not him coming off the bench is changing some of his confidence in how he performs out there on the floor? Some people have noticed that, you know, there were a few opportunities, especially in the Boston game, where a more confident Maxey might have shot or, you know, been more aggressive in those situations where maybe he was deferred a little bit. Are you seeing some of that? Do you feel like there's some merit there, or do you feel like Doc Rivers is still trying to massage the situation a little bit?
The last thing's definitely true. I think, yeah, Tyrese Maxey has been open about he went through a tough period mentally where he was trying to sort through all of this in his head.
Had to call his mom and dad, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's normal for him. He talks with his folks a bunch, but they helped him out. And he just said, look, I'm human and I am going to have some rough patches. And clearly part of the difficult time for him was getting his head around, I'm off the bench right now and I don't necessarily love that, but I'm going to make the best of it. And he has tried to do that, but clearly inconsistency and consistent aggression, those are, you know, broad concerns for the Sixers. I think in my mind there wouldn't be much risk and there'd be obvious potential reward in moving Maxey back into that starting lineup. Obviously, Doc Rivers had framed this as the Sixers having multiple starting lineups that they would employ, and that has not come to be. And that, as we said at the time, sounded totally logical, right? You try to adjust to matchups and you use the personnel that makes sense to begin games. I just think D'Anthony Melton has a track record of coming off the bench and excelling with that. Mm-hmm. He's not someone who needs to get warm at the start of games. And in Memphis, he had the reputation of a microwave shooter and scorer and an instant impact sort of player. And I think that was apparent early in this season as well. And Tyrese Maxey, I think fair enough to chalk up some of the inconsistency to difficulty striking the fine line between aggression and deferring to teammates, running an offense as a guy leading a second unit, all of these factors that would be not so easy for anyone, and especially so for a 22-year-old kid who had been a full-time starter up until he got injured and then moved to a bench role. So for me, it's not like horribly egregious that the Sixers, after Maxey's injury, brought him off the bench. Especially given how well Melton was playing and his competency as a starter and the concerns with Maxey defensively. Like, I don't think it was a no-brainer call that Maxey should have started every single game, you know, right away after the injury. But I think now it is increasingly easier to make the case that he should slide back into that starting lineup. I believe, you know, before the All-Star break, I said, you know, maybe over the break would be a nice time to reintegrate him there. That hasn't happened, and now there's 20-odd games left. So I think hard to know exactly how it's going to play out, whether Doc Rivers is really going to stick with D'Anthony Melton full-time. But for me, yeah, plenty of good reasons to slide Tyrese Maxey back into that starting five. you know, despite the encouraging performance off the bench last night.
We'll get into some more PJ Tucker discussion, but with Maxey back in the starting lineup, what's your ideal starting five? Is Jalen McDaniels in there? Is PJ Tucker, Tobias Harris, Harden, and Maxey in the backcourt? What's the five for you?
Yeah, I mean, like we said, I think
matchup based.
It made sense to be a little matchup based, but no, by and large, I would say, you know, Maxey for Melton. You know, Melton's this super six man who can play, you know, 25 to 30 minutes a game in many situations. I think it's still not especially difficult to put him on star perimeter players, you know, the way the Sixers like to do with Matisse Thybulle. And of course, yeah, the Sixers hope that Jalen McDaniels is a defensive option off the bench. But I think the way the Sixers are set up now, you know, teams are inclined to find mismatches with their second unit. And teams know the Sixers like to run those units with four or five bench guys. I think if D'Anthony Melton, you know, returns to a bench role, not at all difficult to avoid those situations and get him on the, you know, Jason Tatum's of the world for a few minute stretches.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because you said that Tucker should be guarding the other team's best guys. Did the Sixers make a mistake not having him on Jason Tatum at the end of the game there and D'Anthony Melton having that assignment? And I say that because of Melton's, well, more or less Tatum's size compared to Melton's size, 6'8 to 6'2. And, you know, he ends up shooting over top of him and hitting a big three. So,
yeah, again, that would be a little nitpicking to me. I think the Sixers did a lot wrong in the second half of that game. But, I mean, that was an extremely difficult shot by Tatum. So I'm not going to harp on that. And I think Melton and Tobias Harris combined to play very good defense on Tatum. And as you said, he was worse than his normal production. So not going to fixate on that. But I do think D'Anthony Melton is obviously a guy they like late in games defensively. I just think he doesn't need to start games. Mm-hmm. And Tyrese Maxey perhaps would benefit and be able to get greater consistency if you slide him back into a starting role here rather soon. I think that is the way it looks here, though. Again, I don't think it's, you know, Doc Rivers has done anything horrifically wrong with how he's approached it. But I do think it would be very, very easy to get behind Tyrese Maxey as a starter again. It's just pretty compelling to make that case.
Injured for over 70 years, Lundy Law has been the number one personal injury law firm in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. Their services are exemplary. Their results are exceptional. Call 1-800-LUNDY-LAW to get the money you deserve. Opioid addiction is a national public health crisis. The Someone You Know podcast from the Independence Blue Cross Foundation offers inspiring stories that challenge stigma, offer hope, and humanizes the disease of addiction. Download the new season 3 of Someone You Know on all major podcast platforms. Running out of time here on the Sixers Talk podcast. A couple of points, Noah. I was talking to Coach Lynam, and I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but he felt Doc Rivers made a mistake with putting Joel Embiid on the floor where he did in that final Celtics possession, because he's not able to do anything to help use his defensive prowess to deter that type of shot. And he went, I was like, well, so Coach, what you would have had in a high post? And he's like, well, anywhere but where he had him. And he added to that, that he felt like if that was the case, that he's going to have Joel closer to the basket when there's clearly, you know, the ball's out in the perimeter and a shot is going to come from somewhere closer to that direction, that why even have him out there on the floor if he's not using his defensive prowess in some way to deter a shot? With that said, we also have our PJ Tucker discussion with him playing backup minutes, Doc Rivers saying that is maybe exclusively who you may see in that backup five position. But give me some insight on those two topics before we get out of here.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I definitely understand that viewpoint. I think Embiid's got to be on the floor in one way, shape or form, even if it's mostly as a deterrent, and maybe just his presence makes Tatum a little less likely to
go to the
settle
basket
for a pull-up jumper, okay. Sort of more likely to do so. But yeah, I hear that. I mean, Embiid definitely has the versatility to hedge and to blitz. And I think the Sixers prefer him in a drop coverage and know that he is most comfortable as a rim protector. Mm-hmm. But sure, when a clock starts to wind down, a 7-foot dude who's pretty agile, you know, going into your point of view would, I imagine, be concerning for any sort of player. But again, I do think like that wasn't a terribly guarded possession for the Sixers. For me, it was just
better offense.
Hit a great shot.
Better offense, yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful pullback dribble and the jump shot to go with it.
Yeah. And as I said, you know, big picture, their clutch defense has been, you know, literally the NBA's best. So we'll see if they can keep that up. But thus far, you know, the numbers are good there. And I think Joel Embiid obviously is a big reason why they are so great in the clutch defensively on most nights. But yeah, with PJ Tucker,
we're approaching Tucker time. The playoffs are almost here.
Yes. And like, to me, he's been on an upward trajectory, you could argue, the last 6 or 8 weeks. And I think it's been most obvious, perhaps, the last two games, because these are your classic, you know, potential Eastern Conference playoff opponents. Grabbed 16 rebounds, you know, well above his previous season high against Boston. And then you see last night, he makes Jimmy Butler work for everything, you know, takes the shots that are there in terms of the corner threes. And I think it's become increasingly obvious the ways in which he is, you know, most valuable once the playoffs and those sorts of games roll around. But the backup five picture, I think I've said like many a time that PJ Tucker would become a more prominent part of that. And Doc Rivers last night was as direct on that topic as I think I've heard in saying, we love PJ at the five. We expect he's going to do that a lot in the playoffs. We, you know, believe that's going to go well, but he's 37 years old and essentially we don't want to overtax him, you know, by having him bang against, you know, 7-foot dudes every single night for 10 minutes in games that are not that high stakes. So makes sense. But of course, you like to actually see a little more evidence for that confidence, right? Besides just PJ Tucker has done this before.
Right.
And Rivers did admit we're still trying to figure out which lineups he's best in at the five. And of course, you know, get chemistry with those specific units. But I think overall, honestly, it's like a logical viewpoint. And it's one that has kind of felt most likely to me throughout this process. Like immediately after they signed him, it just felt pretty clear that PJ Tucker as a playoff backup center could be quite useful for the Sixers. Of course, they would like to have greater confidence in their other backup center options. And Paul Reed's been the other guy lately, and I think has been very up and down and, you know, has had some tough moments. But PJ Tucker will factor heavily in this equation. And I'm not going to argue with prioritizing his health and not wanting to wear him down too heavily. A fresh Tucker in the playoffs, I think, could really be a weapon for the Sixers and allow them to get by in the Embiid minutes. I don't think we should expect, you know, them to be outscoring teams by great margins, but Tucker at the five, that it doesn't tend to happen that his teams are badly beaten when he's in that position. And the Sixers this year with him at center have been really great offensively. They've struggled defensively and, you know, overall they've been about even. I think the last I checked, it was a minus one ish net rating on cleaning the glass.
Wow.
If you can be a minus one net rating with Embiid off the court in the playoffs, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So that would be the hope. And I think last night was the clearest articulation from Doc Rivers of how the Sixers see it. I mean, ironically, Dwayne Dedman, you know, hasn't even debuted yet. He's out with this left hip injury, and he was, you know, in street clothes against his former team. Theoretically, he is an option against bigger teams because he has more size than their other centers, and he has, you know, the pedigree of, you know, he can protect the rim and he can grab defensive rebounds. But PJ Tucker's the guy that the Sixers want to be their top backup center, it sure sounds like.
We will keep an eye on that. Enjoy the game tomorrow. That has been the Sixers Talk podcast brought to you by Wilmington University. Wilmu Works. For Noah, I'm Danny and Ben Berry. We'll see you next time.